So do you know what I'm going to do this year is see more films at the film festival than I've seen since I was a student?
Yeah,
I reckon.
Same. I mean, in the past, I've taken like a week off and tried to jam as many movies as I can in and,
yeah.
and sort of push my boundaries of what I would normally go and see. And this year, I can see everything.
It's going to be so good.
I think it's going to be great. So basically the story is that the New Zealand International Film Festival have announced that they're going to stream the festival this year rather than hosting it in cinemas around Wellington. There's been a bit of a ruckus about that, which, Emily, you did a story about.
Yeah, I read a story about it yesterday. So the association that represents cinemas in New Zealand feels like the film festival is kind of they actually use the phrase turning their back on them, basically at a time when they really need content and a reason for people to go to the movies. The film festival is taking that away from them. I can see where the cinemas are coming from. I mean, if cinemas are actually open at the end of July, then yes, for the usual film festival hosts, which let's remember is far from every theatre in New Zealand, but for the ones that normally do host the film festival, yes, it will be a shame not to have those movies and, you know, and have the content in a time when there's not a lot of new stuff coming through.
Yeah, because they're unlikely to have movies from anywhere, because, I mean, it depends whether or not America's open again, and there may be European movies coming through, but it's the big marquee blockbuster stuff that they're not going to be getting for a while until America's pulled its pants up.
That's right. But, you know, we just don't know if that's going to happen. We just don't know. And the film festival can't bank on theatres being open.
Right. And also, like, every film festival around the world is doing this at the moment as well. Tribeca and Sundance and South by Southwest have all teamed up together to do this We Are One global online film festival that starts at the end of May. And actually, yeah, the Berlin and the Toronto are involved in that as well.
Is that right?
So, I mean, I don't know what films are going to be in it. I don't know how many, if any, Kiwi films are in it. I spoke to the Film Commission a couple of weeks ago and they didn't know they couldn't say if there were going to be any in it. But it's a pretty big deal, and it's kind of saving grace of a couple of those. South by Southwest have actually had an online film festival going, streaming film festival going on Amazon as well at the moment.
I didn't know that.
We can't see any of those films here anyway. They're not licensed for here, probably because a lot of them might turn up in our own film festival.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just what a lot of festivals have had to do to survive, and for the sake of the filmmakers that they tend to support.
Yeah.
And I think, and I wrote this in a column I did a couple of weeks ago, that cinemas have kind of weathered a lot of storms. They survived TV, they survived VHS, they've survived DVDs, they're still here. There's still something that people want to go and do, and I think that's why they'll ride this one out too.
Yeah, going to the movies isn't just about seeing the movie. It's about the whole experience of being at the theatre. Yeah.
Exactly. And I know it's a kind of a kick in the nuts, but, you know, they just have to hang in there and they're going to get this huge raft of big blockbuster films coming through later in the year.
Yeah.
You know, what else is coming? Wonder Woman is the Black first Widow. One that I thought of. Black Widow. But a whole bunch of films are coming that are going to be lines out the door.
Dune.
OMG. Oh, and there's a new Venom movie. Speaking of hot guys and crazy sci-fi movies.
So which many good movies.
That's what we're always talking about, right?
that's the subtitle of every episode.
Exactly.
This is Off Script, a podcast about the things we love, by me, Kylie Klein-Nixon, and entertainment reporter Emily Brooks.
And speaking of blockbusters, the music that you can hear right now is our topic this week, our overall topic this week.
We are talking, this is one of the most exciting things that's happened since we've been in lockdown, I think.
I feel like the thing, well, it is the most exciting thing, but I've got to, when it was announced, I actually thought it was already happening, so I must have just decided in my mind that this is what's going to happen. And we're just, you know, it's going to happen, so I'm not even that surprised. You know, when Taika announced it on his Instagram, I wasn't that surprised. I am delighted, though. And we're talking about Taika Waititi getting his own Star Wars film.
His own Star Wars film? How can we talk about movies that are coming out this year and not talk about Thor?
Oh,
my God. Is that
due
for release this year?
Yes. Oh, no, I think it's 2021.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Whenever it is,
obviously,
it's not
they
soon
haven't even started.
Shot it.
Pre-production on that, so. Let alone shooting any of the principals, so.
Yeah, okay.
We've got a ways to wait for that, but. That is also, you know, basically why I have to stay alive for at least the next however many years and not just die of lockdown malaise or whatever the hell is going on with me.
There's so much to live for. I mean, okay, so that movie is probably like
Wonder Woman alone.
3 years away at least, Taika's Star Wars movie. Yeah. There's the second part of June. That's a two-parter.
When we come to do the Dune episode... I think the fact that he's doing it as a two-parter is amazing because, wow, there's so much to unpack in that one book. But I don't know, you know, there's a million books in that series. There's like five or something. But, anyway, we'll talk about that another time. But I'm so glad that that's a two-parter because it means it's going to be so much more detailed and...
Marvelous.
Game of Thrones in space.
Denis Villeneuve said that he, I think he would only do it if they would let him do it in two parts. I think that was his thing. I'll do Dune, but I can only do the adaptation justice if you'll let me do it in two parts.
I really want to start telling you why that's a good idea, but let's not do that. Let's talk about Taika and Star Wars.
We'll do a whole Dune episode before Dune comes out.
You have to read Dune before we do that episode, by the way.
All right.
Oh my God, listeners, tune in for that one. Anyway, tune in for the text I'll be reading. Emily going, why have you done this to me? Why am I reading this absolute crap? Why am I reading racist nonsense?
Just stick pictures of Timmy in like every second page to remind myself why I'm doing it.
Why you're there. The best thing about that film, the story is, oh my God, no, stop. We're going to stay on target.
We're not talking about you.
Stay on target. Speaking of Star Wars, our target is the Death Star, not...
So Taika's doing a movie in the Star Wars universe.
Okay, so Taika's already in the Star Wars universe.
Because he directed two episodes of The Mandalorian.
He directed two episodes of The Mandalorian and he played the robot IG, I can't remember, but I will remember so. I can't remember the name of their robot. It's an assassin robot that the Mandalorian meets in episode one, gets a hole blown in it, and then it turns up again in the final episode, and Taika voiced that character. And he also directed a couple of episodes. And fan beloved episode as well. So from a show that was across the board adored by Star Wars fans. So he's already in the family. But for him to get his own whole film, that's like... It's kind of mega. Part of me thinks... So basically, you know, the Star Wars fandom is an absolute cesspit of horror. I don't know if you know this.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. So there's a big subsection of that group of people who are just the worst. But there are also... You know, any fandom has people like that. But
yeah.
I feel like... Maybe he is a strange choice for for Star Wars because
of his tone.
The tone is so different. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but also they've sort of talked now about how they're going to start pushing the universe out a little bit. They've kind of finished with Rise of Skywalker, the worst film in the entire three trilogies.
Mm-hmm.
Or the one that made the least sense anyway, and which will probably make people laugh. But anyhow. It did have some extremely, extremely good Adam Driver moments.
Yeah. That goes so far, I feel like.
It did carry that film for me. If it hadn't been for those Adam Driver moments, yeah, I would have checked out pretty early on that one. But yeah, so there's sort of room. I mean, it's a massive sprawling universe. It's supposed to be anyway.
Mm.
And, you know, the last three films kind of kept pulling it back into this sort of central Skywalker story, which is kind of a bummer. Even though the second one, which was, what the hell was that? Sounded like a sound effect from Star Wars.
Is it from the background of my house?
Yeah.
It's the dishwasher draining.
Do you have a Sarlacc pit in the background? Back in the day, Kathleen Kennedy said that she wanted to try some kind of different stuff in the Star Wars universe. And she hired
Christopher Miller and Phil Lord to do
the Solo movie. And that, I don't know if you know about this. You probably do. You probably heard about how they got kicked off and replaced with Ron Howard. So they hired Lord and Miller Ron Howard. Who is a great journeyman filmmaker. There's no two ways about it. I mean, the guy gets the job done. But you've hired Lord and Miller to make a movie and then you replace them with the most bog standard journeyman. It's weird. It's a weird, you know, they kind of say they want to go out to the outer limits, but really they want to placate this section of fans who just want Star Wars A New Hope over and over and over again.
Right.
So, yeah, that's my long-winded way around it. So I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, I think Taika's probably a really great choice to push the limits a little bit.
Shake it up.
Because he's going to do that. Yeah, he's going to do that 80s thing. He loves the 80s thing. He's going to do I don't know if he's a huge Star Wars fan or not. I guess so. But he's also going to push it a little bit like he did with Thor.
Yeah, but look how well that worked.
Oh, it was amazing.
The Avengers is different, right? Because the Avengers already had a bit of like tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, exactly. Comedy was already there.
A bit of tongue-in-cheek. And a sort of a little bit of a wink and nudge kind of self-referential humour.
What the Avengers does that's so great is that the characters can be funny and not take things seriously and make jokes, whereas the situation is often serious or heavy or meant to be weighty.
Right.
And that gives, you know, connects you with those characters so much more than if they're like also weighty and too serious and Shakespearean. I mean, that's also part of the joke in the Avengers as well, you know.
Does
mother know thou wearest her drapes is a line from the first Avengers movie. So
it's such a big part of what makes those movies so great is the way that the characters interact with each other. Because they are, you know, I mean, you separate the Avengers out into individual characters and, you know, they all are like really different with obviously really different powers, but also like different backgrounds and different motivations and stuff like that. But what they've done is created a world where they are all like, I was gonna say mates together, but more than that, they're all like a family, like some of them get on better than others and they like bicker, you know, and they all have their like particular quirks and stuff like that, but they all sort of love each other
in the end. They are all together in it together. Yeah. Oh my god, I rewatched Endgame for the 1 year anniversary the other day.
Yeah.
And I sobbed like a child. And
like
it was
the last
really great.
45 minutes of that movie.
So
just
intense.
Rip your soul out and jump
so
all
good.
Over it.
And that's a payoff. There's a ton of fan service in that movie. That is the payoff for a decade of watching those films. So none of it feels like fan service.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, that's the problem with the last three Star Wars films, is there's been a lot of fan service and not enough of a build-up to connect you with the new characters to make that fan service worthwhile. And in the end, the final film in that trilogy was just a big J.J. Abrams turd of fan service.
Right.
That, you know, stank up the cinema, basically.
And when you talk about it from that perspective, then Taika Waititi is a brilliant choice. Because if there's anyone who can find the humanity in it, it's him. I think that's something that characterises, you know, all of his, not even just films, but like all of his projects that he's been. I mean, look at something like, look at What We Do in the Shadows, right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes something that's really tropey and feels really done and kind of over, you know, so a group of vampires, and finds the humour but also the pathos within those characters and those tropes. So, like, What We Do in the Shadows, both the brilliant short film on which the series is based and also the equally good series that's currently in its second season. It's like, it's totally true to vampire canon, right? That the film, none of the things that the vampires do are outside of any like vampire lore that's been around for thousands of years. They operate totally within that, but he also like draws from them within the confines of that lore everything that people can connect to on a human level, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny. I mean, this is Tiger's Wheelhouse. It's
totally,
absolutely no one else can do this. It's pretty awe-inspiring, and I kind of don't think, I think people are just like, he's great and he's a great Kiwi bloke, and he is those things too, but the guy's a freaking genius.
I know,
on a number of levels. No one else can do what he did. When you think about Thor, okay, so this was a done, Thor 2 was terrible. It was overblown, it was weighty, it was, you know, took itself way too seriously.
And I have Thor, a confession to make to you about that film.
You haven't seen it? You haven't seen
no,
it?
No, I have seen it. It's a worse confession. I actually fell asleep in the cinema
I'm not at all surprised. It was not great. I mean, the interaction between Thor and Loki is always fun, but it wasn't.
How could I be watching a movie that stars Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston and Natalie Portman
and fall
asleep? But
this is the problem. This is, you know, I mean, that sums it up really, doesn't it? So, but then he comes in from there and he takes this character that everybody was kind of like, it's not my favourite. It's not my favourite out of the lot. Too po-faced, too heavy. But Hemsworth has always done wonders with that character.
Yeah.
That is a really tough sell. I mean, it's a really tough sell. It's such a bizarre character. It's a tough sell in the comics too, really. I mean, I guess if you're a big Marvel fan, you'd be more. But anyway, that's another whole other episode. But yeah, and then he comes, swoops in, totally changes the character without changing the character.
Yeah.
And reinvigorates the entire franchise. And I think that's what they want him to do for Star Wars.
Yeah. And when you put it in those terms, it's just like the perfect. They couldn't have gotten a better person.
Could not. I'm so excited for it. I can't even imagine what he's going to do, and I think that's great, and I really hope he just does something, you know,
wacky.
Just digs into the lore and comes up with something completely new and weird and wonderful.
That's what he can do, right? He does, like, wacky but honest.
Yeah.
That sort of sums up everything that he's done from, like, you know, Eagle versus Shark to, like, Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
Here is my very naive, very non-Star Wars fan question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I can
answer it.
Where in the universe does this movie fit? Because we've got the three trilogies, and I actually thought that at the end of the third trilogy it was, like, done. So what's this now?
So, well, I think that they wanted to sort of push it out into the universe a little bit. They did a movie called Rogue One, which took a thing that happened before the original, you know, the 70s, 80s series.
Yeah.
And turned that into a fantastic movie, directed. And they did Solo, which was another prequel, which was far less well-received and really
quiet. I haven't seen that.
There's a couple of good things in that film that I think it's a real pity they didn't dig into a little bit more. And, like, I really enjoyed seeing behind the Empire's lines, which you don't really get to see in the other films.
Oh, yeah.
And the quote-unquote the war kind of thing. And that was pretty cool. They could have spent a bit more time in there, but they didn't. This massive, you know, sprawling galaxy full of planets and cultures and stories that are all adjacent to the central Star Wars Skywalker story. He could go anywhere. When I was growing up, one of my favourite books was a Star Wars. It's like one of my all-time favourite books. This is so embarrassing telling you this, Emily. But one of my favourite books was a Star Wars book called Stories from the Cantina.
Yeah.
Which was basically fan fiction.
Okay.
It was a published book. And it was basically, it took every one of the creatures in the scene, the cantina scene from A New Hope, and kind of told their story about how they ended up there, or it was either how they got there or where they were going afterwards. And those stories were all little mini adventures. And in fact, I think that J.J. Abrams kind of plucked one of the stories out of that book for Finn's story in the most recent trilogy, because one of the stories is about a stormtrooper who kind of gets a conscience and defects, basically.
That's the kind of thing J.J. Abrams would have done, I reckon.
Yeah,
like, he's such a big fanboy that he just has consumed everything in the canon.
No doubt that he read that book.
Some, like, super obscure. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I have no doubt that he read that book. And maybe he did read it when he was younger, and it just kind of hung around as a good idea, because it is a cool idea. I mean, they can't all be absolute assholes. There had to be at least one or two of them who were like, are we the bad guys? You know, like that, you know, that sketch. Wait a minute, are we the bad guys?
So good.
Yeah, so good. And we'll link to it in the notes because it's a fucking classic. But yeah, so I loved that. Now, I can imagine Taika taking one of those kind of, like taking one of those weird alien characters and just turning it into its own side adventure, because there was this whole sprawling war going on between the rebels and the Empire, and, you know, Tatooine's not the only planet in town, so I think he could
go. Ain't that the truth?
Damn straight. I mean, as much as it apparently looks like it, based on J.J. Abrams' last movies. But anyway.
Okay, so you think it's going to be some kind of, like, broader expansion of the universe, like a spin-off?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean,
essentially.
That's what I would like to see. If they're going to keep going, they have to. I mean, they cannot go back. It just makes the universe feel so small. Like, the whole idea of Rey being Palpatine's granddaughter was the dumbest motherfucking thing I've ever had to sit in a cinema and suck up in my entire fucking life. Fuck you, J.J. Abrams. Prick.
In any media, or like in any kind of film or whatever, it really annoys me when all of the twists start to become, and this person's related to this person, and this person's related to this person. And I'm aware that Star Wars actually, like, created that twist. But still, it just seems like such an easy, like, pat kind of thing to do now. Like,
really,
but wait, now your allegiances are going to be called into question, and all of your beliefs are going to be compromised because in actual fact, you're related to this person.
I know, and they're always trying to get back that wow factor of...
The first time.
I am your father. Because that was truly stunning, and it's like I still can remember the exact sensation of shock and awe I felt as a child when that in that moment, because it was like, how could he lie like that? I just didn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. But then when it was true, it's just still awesome to this day.
Nothing better than a good twist. We should actually do a whole episode on that.
There's nothing better than a good twist,
but that is no longer a good twist. That is just pat and overdone and lazy.
Did you see writing? Did you see The Last Jedi?
No.
So Rian Johnson is my absolute hero.
And I adore him.
In years to come, that movie is going to have the same kind of cachet that Empire has now. People are going to look back at it and go, holy shit, that was a really good movie in and of itself. And it did a lot of really interesting things. And it had a lot of really interesting things to say about heroism and about our perceptions of heroism and what it really means and what it actually does when somebody, quote unquote, is heroic, how it affects other people. It had super cool, interesting things to say about the characters. And he did this really amazing thing with Rey where he basically, you know, plays on that idea that she is really no one. She's nobody's, you know, she is in and of herself important. That's all. And that was like such a cool thing. So for J.J. to come and just undermine that with that bunch of shit in the next film was just dumb.
And the thing is this
big group of fanboys who are like angry because it's not this big swashbuckling kind of thing. It should have expects you to turn your brains on for 5 minutes, and they're angry about it, and it's just a real pity. So I hope that Taika he's quite good at taking the piss out of people and making them laugh at the same time. So I feel like he did that a lot with Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
It's like, it's sort of mildly taking the piss out of people who take the whole Marvel Universe way too seriously.
Definitely.
But you can't be... It's sort of, yeah, like...
But a, lovingly. Like
being, yeah, it's like being teased by a dear friend. And yeah. How Kiwis show affection for each other. And he, sort of what he does with his movies. So I think that's really cool as well. I think you hope he does that a little bit.
I think what he'll do... I mean, I think, you know, what he could really do that kind of, you know, maybe no one else could do is create a movie that is like reverential to what's come before it, respectful of what's come before it, but also completely its own, like creates its own mini world within the world. I think that's what he did with Ragnarok in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why he's getting his own. It's you know, it was how the end of it. It's supposed to be the end of a trilogy, and now it's going to be.
And now he's.
And it got Natalie Portman wants to come back as well. I mean, she was done with the whole Thor franchise. I think that's why she's not really in Endgame at all, even though there's a space for her in that film.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
And references she didn't come to and her, shoot right? Them, but she didn't. Yeah.
But she's back for this one because. Who wouldn't want to work with Taika right now? He's like on fire.
Right, I know. So cool. So hang on, she's back for, you mean she's back for Thor, not she's going back into the Star Wars universe to...
No, she's going back into the into Love and Thunder. Yeah, she's going to be in Love and Thunder. She's going to play Lady Thor.
Yeah, so cool. I can't wait for that movie.
Why can't they just
make it already?
I'm just like... I feel like, okay, this is, I'm going to draw a long bow here.
Please.
But I feel like Taika could be doing for my nephew's childhoods what Steven Spielberg kind of did for mine. Like, he could be the saving grace of these kind of genre films. And, you know, I mean, they have the obviously there are way more directors working in Marvel than him. And the Russo brothers are fucking legends.
But, so great.
So good.
But totally different as well.
Completely different. Oh, that's the thing about the whole Marvel universe. It's like every film is different, and
that's, they all I have just to say, I don't think that's always a good thing. There's a few I reckon that stand out a bit. That like the second Thor movie for sure.
Yeah,
as
a you turkey.
Know, there's a few that kind of stand out where it's like, oh, that you know, the tone's wrong here. Like you,
Iron Man 2 is also a bit of a
did John Favreau not direct that one as well?
Yeah, he did.
He's got it wrong the second time around.
I think the first
Iron Man movie, I mean, is, you know, will just go down in history.
Yeah, and the third one, which is Shane Black, is my favourite Iron Man film of all time. So good. So good. Does so many cool things. And it's, you know, I think it's the only Iron Man film that passes the Bechdel test. God bless you, Shane Black.
How many Avengers films do?
Not many.
Not many. No. I would have thought.
No.
It'd be worth.
Oh, the Russo brothers ones do, and
Black Panther probably does.
Yeah, and I think the Endgame does.
Yeah, Endgame would.
Black
Widow will.
Yes, it will.
Oh, I'm so excited for that movie too.
Oh, same. Although, it's kind of the Black Widow suffers from the same issues that all prequels have, in that you kind of know. How it goes, because you already know where those characters end up, right?
Yeah, so what prequels, the challenge for a prequel is how to make the journey interesting.
Yeah.
You know where it's going.
The challenge is also, I think, too, it's valuable sometimes to make you look at things differently. Like,
yeah.
Well, I think we talked about that as well with, like, Wicked and things like that.
Totally.
You have to look at those characters in a different way. And that's, you can't do that with Black Widow, obviously. I mean, because the only other way to look at her is that she's...
Yeah,
I mean, this is going to be a journey from someone who is morally amoral into someone who's one of the, you know, champions of Earth.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of a cool story arc.
I think this is where
Solo struggled, I think, because what you're talking about there is like you had to, that was the journey of someone from naive hopefulness to, you know, the guy who shot first in the cantina. It's a kind of ugly story arc to have him. So I think Solo was on the back foot to start with, but
right, yeah, that's
but then it was just really boring and weird, and it fridged a woman in like the first third.
Oh god!
So it's like really stink. But yeah.
So right, so
Taika perform. I hope he appears in the film as well. I hope he stars in it.
Oh yeah.
Also his thing.
Surely he'll do something. Yeah, I mean he does that. He's in his movies. He'll at least kind of cameo somewhere, surely.
No, I hope so.
But he normally does more than just cameo.
Yeah, like supporting.
He normally has a pretty significant supporting role.
Yeah.
In his own movies.
Oh, it's gonna be so good.
So that means he will have directed in the Marvel Universe and the Star Wars Universe.
Mm.
You've got J.J. Abrams, who's done Star Wars and Star Trek.
Do you know what? Can I just talk about that for 1 second?
Yeah.
So the thing that's so disappointing about J.J. Abrams' turn in Star Wars is that what he did with the Star Trek movies was that he totally retconned the entire Star Trek
resuscitated universe. The entire franchise.
He not only resuscitated it, but in terms of the story, he retconned the entire thing, baseline. Right. None of that stuff, not the original series, not Next Generation, none of that stuff happened anymore. That's all gone.
Yeah.
He retconned it with that film and no one complained. Like, it was great. Yeah. That first film was brilliant. I loved the Chris Pine one. Yeah,
loved
fantastic.
I would never have expected to have loved that film.
Oh, it was a fucking really good time.
But I really did, and not only because of Chris Pine, although Chris Pine's face never made anything worse.
Never. Like, I don't actually find him that attractive. He's not really my... I mean, God, who am I?
Oh, here's my cat.
Somebody's... Aww. You sure it's a cat?
We've all definitely seen
Captain Marvel. it could be an alien.
Are you an alien? Pretty sure it's just a cat. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. Chris Pine. Oh, you don't want to...
He's not my favourite Chris. He's not my favourite Chris.
He's not my favourite Chris either. But he's just so enjoyable to watch. You know, that's a high bar. I mean, saying he's not my favourite Chris doesn't mean that he's not an extremely attractive man.
I think we need to do the Chris's. We've never done the Chris's before.
All right. Are we assuming that we don't count Pratt anymore?
Oh, no. I think we have to have the Pratt in there. That's the low bar, right? He's the bar.
Okay, because... It's a shame because once upon a time, he was probably my number one Chris.
He was pretty close to my number one for a while there.
There used to be a lot schlubbly, to love about that man.
Schlubbly
when
Chris,
he was, oh, schlubby, schlubby Chris Pratt in Parks and Rec. Yes.
Amen.
I will. Thank you. And then, I was quite sad when he got all cut when he did Guardians of the Galaxy. But then I watched Guardians of the Galaxy and I was like, no, actually, I'm still okay with this.
He's still schlubbly. He's just got a nice body now. It's such a head fuck.
Internally schlubby.
The soul of a schlubbly, schlubbly man and the body of someone else. It's incredible.
I sort of went through the same thing when Jason Segel got buff. I was like, I'm going to be really upset about this. He kind of lost quite a lot of weight and stopped being super schlubby. And I was,
I did not know that.
I had to sort of brace myself for it because I was like, schlubby Jason Segel is just my happy place. But then I looked at non-schlubby Jason Segel and I was like, but I still see schlubby Jason Segel.
It's still my happy place.
That's amazing.
I feel the same when Seth Rogen like also lost a lot of weight.
It's the same.
You know how Jonah Hill makes that joke about how you shouldn't have lost weight in that film? I can't remember what film it is. And I was like, he really shouldn't have. But I love him no matter what. He can just look like anything. I don't care.
Okay, Chris's.
He is my man. We're doing the Chris's. Oh my God, this all has to be edited out. My mother can never hear me talk like this.
My mum has definitely heard me talk like this.
Well, she totes approves of my Seth Rogen obsession.
Yeah, she would, secretly, wouldn't she?
I think she likes to fantasize that he actually is her son-in-law. The Chris's. Okay, for me, it's got to be Evans.
I reckon your number one and my number two are probably going to be reversed because I put Hemsworth as my number one, Chris.
Hemsworth is your number one. Okay, yeah. So I would put Pine in at number two.
Oh, interesting. No, I'd bring Hemsworth in at number two.
Oh, yeah, Pratt's my at the bottom of that list anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he just has to be now. It's so sad.
People are always trying to bring other Chris's in, but there's a cap on the Chris's.
Okay.
I'm capping off the Chris's.
Right. So I think that there's room for at least one more Chris. And the Chris that I would bring in is Chris Messina.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, did you not watch The Mindy Project?
No.
Ah, you need to go watch The Mindy Project. And it's very, very funny. It's very good and it's very funny.
Of course it would be funny. I'm sure it is. I just haven't got around to it. My massive list of stuff I need to watch.
Is Chris Messina. So if I was going to bring in another Chris... That would be my call.
He'd be the Chris. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Who would yours be?
I'll investigate. No, I don't have any others, that's it.
You have no others that you would sneak in?
No,
there,
there are no other Chris's that I'm interested in entertaining at the moment.
I'm sorry, you put Pine before Hemsworth, really?
Yeah, well, he's Australian. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I can't.
That's the only rationale I'll probably accept, because, I mean...
I feel like a terrible racist saying this, but...
You're an objectifier and you're racist. At least I'm only objectifying. I'm an equal opportunity objectifier. I don't care where they're from.
I'm still looking. He's Australian, and I'm still looking, is all I'm saying.
I base my ranking of these men only on their looks.
Oh my god, I'm
a better person than you.
You are a better person than me, it's the truth. Oh my god.
Okay.
But do you know, like, genuinely that episode where Jermaine dates an Australian from Flight of the Conchords is like, I basically watched that without laughing once. I was deadly serious the whole time.
You were like, this is.
Where's your wallet,
Jermaine? Documentary.
Where is your wallet?
Oh, that's awesome. That is a great episode. Not that there is a single dad episode.
Not a one.
Not a one.
Just to bring it on back to Taika Waititi, who also has a few great moments in that show too. So yeah, I can't wait. Let's come back and have another talk once it's announced what the project is going to be.
Yeah, and then another one once the first trailer drops.
OMG, that day is going to be a great day.
There's
still no June trailer. I think that'll take a while because he likes to do some fun things
Danny,
before the story.
What the fuck are you doing, man? Throw me a
he
bone.
He was playing in somebody else. Well, he's playing in somebody else's pit sandbox now too. But when he did Blade Runner, he did those little short films beforehand.
Oh, that's true. He did.
I don't know if you saw any of those. And then,
yeah, no, I remember that.
And then
yep.
there was a lot of like, is this advertising for the film or is it something from the film? Playing with your perception and stuff. I mean, that's an integral part of Blade Runner anyway, so I don't know if that's something he would only do for Blade Runner or if that's the sort of thing he might do with Dune as well. Oh my god, you've got to read that book. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it.
Okay, I'm going to start doing that soon because I feel like it might take me a while.
Yeah, I think you're going to want to put it down and walk away from it often.
I just need some fresh Timmy content, man. Like, it's not like that boy posts on his social media. God, for a millennial... That child is quiet on the socials.
What did he post the other day? What even was that? I couldn't even see it with
weird...
my glasses on.
Yeah, it was an Instagram story and it was just like a black
background. Is it some kind of Unicode symbol or something?
I think it's like the notebook emoji. Also...
Can you please just post some pictures of your bedroom, Timothy?
Yeah, honestly, Timmy, hair. Curls are what we need right now.
Curls. I just want the curls. And on that note, I think we'll sign off this week, listeners.
That was fun. I'm so excited.
Same. I'll see you later.
Yeah, talk to you soon.
Off Script, a weekly podcast about the things we love, is recorded and edited by me, Kylie Klein-Nixon, and senior entertainment reporter Emily Brooks. Drop us a line at offscriptnz@gmail.com or over at Instagram and Facebook @offscriptnz. Take it easy.